All right, sorry for the delay. So let's continue on. So we're in Tari Yud. Feels like it's been a while. Only been, I think, just 1 week because of Tisha B'Av, right? It just feels different. Anyway, so we're in Tari Yud. All right, so I think the last thing we did was, you know, sort of the second paragraph within Ois Dalet. But again, just to go back to get back into it, so Rav Nachman was telling us about this. Again, with the way we were explaining it, about this inverse relationship between Aris and Kalim, right? If you remember, and sort of the sign of true of a person really being on the path of proper Avodas Hashem, which is tikkun, right? That's what we spoke about. That sort of there's two models in which a person can engage with Avodas Hashem. One in a model that's called tikkun, in which Iris and Kalim are truly uniting with each other to create a spiritual infrastructure for Hashem's presence, which is what you want. And in that model, if Iris and Kalim are truly becoming integrated, then it's with an inverse relationship, right? The higher the R, the lower the Kalim that become activated and become sort of enriched by that light. And so that's what we saw, that in that process of tikkun, that's a healthy, rectified state, then the greater, the higher the madrega, the, you know, sort of the more practical the person, the more down to earth their avoda, right? So the example that he was talking about was davening, right? That the higher you went from Avram to Yaakov Avinu, the more relatable davening becomes, right? So that's the example we gave. Let's say, but you know, between Shema and Shemoneh Esrei, right? Shemoneh Esrei is the highest madrega of davening, you know, in terms of the most amount of light is by Shemoneh Esrei. Yet the subject matter of Shemoneh Esrei is the most practical, is the most down to earth, right? So that's, on the other hand, the other example was the other path was a path of toyu, of chaos, in which Aris and Kalim are not really being integrated. So a person is increasing in their light, but it's not really taking effect. It's not being grasped. It's not being processed by one's vessels, by one's practical life. So that was the last thing we saw. Is that the example he's giving is a person who's fasting all day, you know, who's thinking and who's feeling that they're climbing the ladder, but in the meantime, their body is not becoming any more refined. And the proof is, even that's the last thing he said, the proof is that once he stops his fast, he's the same animal that he was before. Nothing's really been fixed. Because his entire Avodas Hashem is disassociating Aris and Kalim, not really coming together. They're not really coming together. And so this is, the example he gave was the difference between again, in the context of davening, because again, like we mentioned the other time, davening is an extreme example of tikkun, right? Of a spiritual experience, right? Which is about standing before the king, which is, means a lot of light, right? Yet the subject matter that you're dealing with is that which is practical. So tefillah is a very, is very much associated with that way, that model, that's called tikkun, that's called rectification. That's why already in the very beginning of Chumash, where we have the first reference of the world, of a rectified world, right, so to speak, where the Pasuk says, for example, where things are growing and the earth is producing vegetation and so on. So it says in Pasuk over there that that vegetation was not, even after Hashem created all the vegetables, all the, you know, plants and so on, they didn't really break through the surface of the soil. Why? Breaking through the surface of the soil means the world is rectified. It means the earth represents the ultimate vessel, right? That's like the lowest. That's like the lowest element, right? The lowest element. And for the earth to give off vegetation, that means that the earth is saturated by light. Vegetation means life. And the earth means the lowest. Life is always associated with light. Ki imcha mekar chayim, it says in Pasuk, with you Hashem is the source of life. Ba'orcha nir or, in your light, you can see light. So we see, so or is always associated with life. Aretz, earth, is associated with vessels, because it's the lowest element. Vegetation, therefore, is an indication of tikkun, where you have life, which is vegetation, being wound and being interconnected with earth, which is the kalim. And what does it say over there? The vegetation did not break through the surface of the soil. Why? So it means there was something lacking in tikkun. The adam ayin la'avodas adam, because the human being wasn't there yet to work the land. What does it mean to work the land? Says Rashi, to daven for rain that will then push the vegetation, you know, out of the you know, to break through the surface of the soil. So you see already from the beginning that davening is the key in order to bring the world to a state of tikkun. And that's what we saw also earlier in maybe the Tarbez, I think it was, when Nachman said that the ultimate rectification is with Mashiach. As the Rambam says at the end, as you always say, you know, he quotes the Pasuk, Kimo l'ha'aretz deyes Hashem, that the earth will be full of God's knowledge, the coming of Mashiach. Again, earth means Kalem, knowledge of Hashem means Hashem's light. The ultimate integration of that, it begins with vegetation, and it completes with Mashiach. That's why Mashiach is himself called a plant, right? Ish tzemach shemoi, right? He's called tzemach. As tzemach David avdecha, why is Mashiach called the sprouting, the growth of Mashiach? Why is it called a vegetable? Why Mashiach is called a carrot? Why is it, you know, so we don't like carrots so much, right? So we want Mashiach, right? So the answer is, I'm just kidding. The any carrot farmers out there shouldn't be offended. But the point is that, again, vegetation, again, is this idea of tikkun. And the ultimate tikkun is Mashiach. This is also why, again, as I said, Reb Nachman says that Iker Klezayin Shel Mashiach, that was the beginning of Torah Beis, I think. Iker Klezayin Shel Mashiach, the main weapon that Mashiach will use to conquer the world is davening. That's not a coincidence. So the beginning of Tzmicha, the beginning of vegetation, was with davening. Adam Ayin Lavidas Adama. There was no human being to daven, but once Adam comes and he davens, now vegetables start. And the ultimate Es Tzemach David is also through davening. Is because, again, this idea, because davening is a model of tikkun, and that's what Gula looks like. And so that's what he's saying. In this Torah of Nachman, is the contrast is between the tzaddik, who is able to daven properly, who's living a life of tikkun. His entire Avodas Hashem's model is one of integration. The higher the R, the more he's, you know, again, to a certain degree, Musar has this quality, right? Because it's like the higher the R, if the point is for the R to be integrated in one's kalim, right, in one's body, so to speak, in one's humanity, so then that means a person has to become ever increasingly aware of one's humanity, right? So it's never about removing oneself or one's humanity, but deepening that connection to humanity. So, and as the higher the R in your life, and therefore the more animated, the lower the kalim, right? That means that you're going to become more and more aware. The lower the kalim, one's negative traits are going to be found more in the lower kalim, right? So the higher kalim, which are activated by lower levels of light, so then you're a pretty good guy, right? But as you increase the light, and therefore you animate lower and lower kalim, then all of a sudden, more inyanim seem to be popping up, you know what I mean, in one's personality traits, is because you're activating lower kalim. That's a good sign. That's a good thing. You know, that's what Musar was, is trying to, like, recognize that, you know. It's trying to, you know, that was a big debate at the time, whether Musar should be studied in the yeshiva or not, whatever it is. But, yeah, but the truth is, it's not a Musar itself is really just orienting Torah learning to be one of tikkun, right? Because Torah also should be, Torah means light, right? But in order for that light of Torah to become, to make sure, to ensure that it's part of a process of tikkun, then it has to be associated with a recognition of ever increasing of an ever increasing process of awakening lower and lower kelim. So, you know, that's sort of the integration going on. But that's the contrast Rav Nachman was laying out for us. You have a tzaddik who knows how to daven, and then you have the bal gaiva, the conceited one, who refuses to accept and to acknowledge that tzaddik knows how to daven. He says, I could daven myself. And that's the last thing we saw also, is that this contrast between tikkun and toyu, really the quality, the difference is in gaiva, is in one's own haughtiness. Because this process of tikkun requires humility on both ends. It requires the light that a person is accessing. It requires that light to be focused, like sort of downward, right? It requires one's kelim to be willing to be fixed, right? It's like a partnership. So each side has to be sort of humbled by the other. Whereas the process of toyu, of chaos, so the kelim are not really changing, and the aura is not changing. The nature of aura is to just be spiritual. The nature of the body is to be coarse and unrefined. And if everyone is full of themselves and not willing to change and not willing to acknowledge what they're missing, what they're deficient in, the soul has to acknowledge its deficiency. The aura has to acknowledge its deficiency in kelim. The kelim has to acknowledge its deficiency in aura. And then there could be a partnership. But if it's with gaiva and yeshus, so no one recognizes that. So that's the last verse we saw last time. Okay, so let's, I guess just to get back in the flow, let's see the last paragraph. Of Avalei loha bali gaiva, yeah, so it's on like the second paragraph on Ois Dalet. Avalei loha bali gaiva, habali gaiva, these bali gaiva, ma'akfin ta'avosu shal Hashem Yisparach. That's what we saw also, again, that's what he's referencing, that they hold back Hashem's taiva, right? That's the last thing, that the real davening of tzaddikim is ultimately, it's what Hashem desires, right? That's a reference to the famous Medrash that the Sfarim quote, that the reason for creation itself was Nisava Kadosh Baruch Hu, Liyesla Yisbaruch Dir Retachtoin. The Rabbanu Shem had a taiva to dwell down here. So that the fulfillment of Hashem's taiva is produced by someone who's on the path of tikkun, because tikkun means like sort of a miniature version of creating. Just like Mashiach, right, which is creating the world in such a way where it becomes integrated with light, right? So on a smaller scale, or on a personal scale, that process of tikkun, of integrating light into your kelim, right? That's Dir B'Tachtoinu. That's creating an environment that Hashem can reside within you. And that fulfills Hashem's taiva, so to speak. That's the meaning of what Chazal say, that Hashem is Mis'ave L'Tfilosim Shel Tzadikim. Hashem desires the davening of the righteous. The answer is again, because what Hashem desires is to live here, right? Is to integrate light and vessels, and the davening of tzaddikim is about that. So these bala gaiva who refuse to acknowledge and refuse to go in that path of the davening of tzaddikim, they hold back the fulfillment of Hashem's taiva. They name of Akshem tzaddikim sheisbalolim, and they don't even allow the tzaddikim to daven for them. Again, they believe that they fasted and they punished themselves enough. And with this, they could become tzaddikim. But that's not really the truth. Because all the fasting that they took upon themselves, it's like a sackcloth that has many, many holes, right? Like it's made of stitches. And then when you try to empty the sackcloth, so if it has like a package in it, you could just dump out the package. But if it became dirtied, right, which is the mashal that he's giving, if it became dirty with mud, whatever fell in the mud, you could shake it out all you want. The mud's not coming out of those, you know, inside the stitching. It's not coming out of that. So he says, the holes, it's still going to remain. And that's what the body is compared to, a sackcloth. Kamei Maratana, like the Gemara says in Shabbos, Shinna Shirei Sakach. I think it's a reference to going to the bathroom. So it's the Gemara says the language of empty the sackcloth. So in other words, so it's the same idea. So these people are choosing a path. So it's interesting, because really what Rav Nachman is also referencing over here is sort of a style, I guess you can say, in Avodas Hashem, which was sort of pre-Baal Shem Tov, right? Pre-Baal Shem Tov, and even the Ramchal talks about this in his introduction to Mesillas Yesharim. So the Ramchal talks about how he saw in his generation, which is just a little bit before the Baal Shem Tov, that there was a very big misunderstanding about what Avodas Hashem is supposed to look like. And so what is Mesillas Yesharim? A lot of this is based on, it would be kedai to see that a part of that introduction to appreciate where Rav Nachman is coming from. But the Ramchal writes over there is that that if you ask an average person, again in his day, you would ask them, what does it mean a tzaddik? What is the path to become a tzaddik? They would tell you, fasting, rolling around in the snow, you know, hitting oneself, making oneself lashes, breaking down the body. And so the Ramchal writes over there, he says, that's completely incorrect. The Iker path of becoming a tzaddik is obviously, you know, besides learning and davening and so on, but it's about refining one's character and like working it through, allowing the light of Torah and the light of Hashem to truly integrate and penetrate one's kelim. So that's exactly what the Ramchal is describing, is the difference between these two paths of tikkun, of rectification versus chaos. And that's what Rav Nachman is referring to over here. So the person thinks that but he's not. Again, it's important to make the following point, though. This shouldn't be confused with what we do find in Chassidus, two different madregas in dealing with one's own inyanim, one's own sackcloth. One is called a skafia, subjugating the sitra achra, the yetzara, iskafia, like to wrestle it down. And the second madrig is hishafcha, to completely convert it and change it into something positive. So one can make the mistake of thinking, well, iskafia, to subjugate and to, you know, to overwhelm the yetzara, is this process of fasting and so on and so forth. But that's not true. I mean, the same Sifri Chassidus that are not a fan of fasting and you know, that old way will tell you that the beginning of one's Avodas Hashem is a skafi, is the subject, is to subdue. So the answer is that the process in which one sort of wrestles down the Yetzirah has to be done also with tikkun. It's just that even in the process of tikkun, of integrating light within one's kelim, that itself, there's stages with that. So the initial stages of that process is one in where the Yetzirah is still existing, it just becomes more and more dormant. So it's not necessarily, so even with Mesillas Yesharim, right? So let's say a person goes with the path of the just, right? That's, even the term Mesillas Yesharim, Yashar, straight is a code in Kabbalah. Sfar, the Ramchal was a great mekubal. Yosher is a code for tikkun, right? In the Zohar Kodesh we find this, that maskala, a term that's used to describe this path of tikkun, of integration between Ars and Kalim, is maskala, which means a scale, things that are balanced, right? Because let's say you would imagine, like, you know, the right side being more representative of Ar, and the left side being representative of Kalim, any imbalance, that's called chaos. But a Yashar, that's called Tikkun. That's why by you know, Yaakovinu is called Yeshurin. Yeah, the middle path. Because Avram and Yitzchak, the two extremes, not Chas V'Shalom, Avram and Yitzchak, they're a part of Tikkun, but extremes, by its very definition, is going to lend itself to some chaos. Right? So Avram has Yishmael, Yitzchak has an Esav, and so on, but Yaakov is Yeshurin. Mesillas Yesharim, the reason why he calls that, why doesn't he call Mesillas Tzaddikim, Mesillas Avdim, I don't know, whatever. Mesillas Yesharim is because, again, it's a code for tikkun. That's what Ramchal is talking about. That's why the Ramchal in his own writings, other places in Kabbalah's farm, identified his sort of purpose in life, and the demarcation point in history from his point on is to reintroduce the world to tikkun and to bring the world closer to the era of Mashiach, which is Umal Ha'aretz Deyas Hashem, which is the ultimate tikkun. So everything about the Ramchal, all the writings of the Ramchal is revolving around this nakuda of of reintroducing the world to a way of tikkun, whether it be in Kabbalah, whether it be in Machshava, whether even Machshava, right, Derech Hashem. The entire style of Ramchal, which is one of a unified system, that itself is tikkun. Whereas before the Ramchal, there was no Sefer Derech Hashem, right? So what did people think, people didn't learn about a unified mahalach, about how Hashem runs the world, right? So it's just all over the place. When you have a problem, you dive into Hashem, and hopefully it gets fixed. Why would Hashem cause the problem to begin with? I don't know, I did something wrong. But there's no, it's like dots, you know, it's like nekudas. It's like, this thing is happening to me, I have to deal with this thing. This thing is happening to me. But there's no unified force that's sort of like guiding this inyan. And where is it going towards? Like, what's the part of tikkun is to have a goal, right? There's a beginning, there's a middle and end. It's Yeshura. And so this is the entire inyan of Ramchal is trying to reintroduce the world to tikkun. So what did I get into this? Also, so the person. So even if a person goes with Ramchal, you have to know that in the initial stages of tikkun, even of tikkun, the Yetzer is not going to be gone, but the Yetzer slowly but surely becomes more and more dormant. That's a major principle in Sefer Tanya, right? The difference between a Beini, right, and a Tzadik, Tzadik V'Raloi, Tzadik V'Toivloi. These are madrigas in how dormant the Yetzer is, and then ultimately the Yetzer to be completely converted into that which is positive. But even those initial stages of putting the Yetzer to sleep, you have to. You're not doing that at all when it's just with fasting and so on. That's just drowning out the noise, so to speak, with other things. You're not engaged. Even iskafia, even to subjugate and to overwhelm and to pin the Yetzer down, you have to engage with it, right? You have to engage with it. So by fasting and so on, the pre-Baal Shem Tov model, you're not really engaging with it at all. That's his mashal with the sackcloth. You're not cleaning it out at all. So it looks like it's being subjugated. It's just, I don't know what a good mashal for that would be, but you're not dealing with it at all. But the moment that you break the fast, you're in the same bad mood as you were before, right? So nothing's really changed.
Yeah, is the infusion of the creation of Caleb, the infusion of Iris, are they two separate things, or are they one?
So this is one of the differences between the model of Tayu and Tikkun is the order of things. In other words, in by the Kisari, the classic model of Tayu, of chaos, is first there's Caleb, and then there's Ar. Now, when that happens, then already the R is behind the 8-ball, right? The truth is, to a certain degree, our lives model that, right? Because we know that, let's say, before Bar Mitzvah, so the Gemara says that a person has a Yetzahara, Chazal say there's a Yetzahara from the time that a person is born, but a Yetzataiv only comes in when they're a Bar Mitzvah. So that model is more Tayu, right? Because the person first has a Yetzahara, which is more oriented to Kalim, right? And then only afterwards is the R, but now you're ready. There's a maise they say from the Rishner, that when the Rishner's father was also a big tzaddik, when he was becoming bar mitzvah, so the Rishner said, the Rishner's father told him, he said that, you know, you're about to have a guest come to you, make sure that he feels comfortable, you know, that he should stay a long time. You're referencing the Yetzer Tov coming in. So how did it go? So the Rishner said, he said, like, Tata, you don't have to worry about it, because when the first guest wanted to come, I told the first guest to hold off. It's not nice. You know, if there's two guests coming, it's not nice for one to come first and then only, you know, to mess up the room and then the other. I told the first one to wait until the second one comes. So now I'm expecting both guests, and we'll be able to take care of the dog. It was the vision. But that model of Iris, first Caleb and then Ard, that's classic Tayu. Tikkun is when they develop together healthily, right? So again, that's like I mentioned before, the, you know, part of life is, you know, it's not as nice and smooth as like, okay, I'll just choose the path of Yusharim, right? And then like the answer, we have Tayu, and we have a natural tendency towards chaos. That's how Hashem put us into the world. So but that model of You know, so those, by the way, those are like kind of the three models. Like in the, I mentioned the Tanya before. You have in the Tanya, it's or people are categorized in like three. There's three categories to a certain degree, right? There's Rasha, right? There's a Beinoni, and there's a Tzaddik, right? To a certain degree, a Rasha represents Tayu, chaos, right? So a Rasha is like, so to speak, that represents someone that's always behind the eight ball. The Yetzer is driving, you know what I mean? And now we have the Yetzer Tayu trying to take the wheels away, you know, take the you know, the control away, but it's behind the eight ball. And then you have the Beini. What's the Beini? The Beini represents Tikkun. Tikkun means Aris and Kalim being integrated. But again, the Kalim are still naturally inclined to that which is negative. It's just that they're being ever, there's an ongoing process of integration between Aris and Kalim. But again, he's still a Beini. So like the Tanya says in Sefer Tanya, Beini never does anything wrong, but he definitely has the, he could, right? So again, because the Kalim are there, but they're always being integrated with R. They sort of growing together. Then there's another higher Madriga, which is called the Tzaddik, and that models itself after sort of, in the Kisvi'ari, an even higher system, which is the system that's called Akudim. What we discussed right now, until now, between Torah and Tikkun, is how the Arizal describes the universe of Atzilus. Okay, I'm going off a little bit, but it's Ephraim's fault. So that universe of Atzilus, which is the universe in which Hashem reveals Himself. So that's the universe of Tikkun. That's the universe of Tikkun. And that's the universe how the Arizal describes how it comes into being in a healthy way, with Aris and Kalim coming simultaneously and growing together. That's Beini. That's Beini. The higher Madrega is a universe that the Arizal describes as Akudim. All this is hinted to in the story of Yaakov Avinu, where Yaakov Avinu, the sheep of Yaakov Avinu, so where the Yaakov Avinu has Akudim, Akudim, Nakudim, Avrudim. So the universe of Akudim is a universe that's even higher than Atzilus. That is a universe where it's Iris first and then Kalim. So Kalim first and then R means the Iris are behind the eight ball. That's Russia. Kalim and Iris together, that's Atzilus. So in other words, like if you want to break it down, the lower worlds of Bri, Yetzir, Asiya, the lower worlds, that's the universe of Russia. That's where Kalim are dominant and Iris are trying to catch up. Right? That's the world that we live in. So a person is born into that. First you're a Kadin, then you're a Gadol, right? And then Atzilus. Atzilus is what is where Aris and Kalim are coming simultaneously, and that's Tikkun, right? But again, even Tikkun is still has the Kalim still have the potential of having their own opinions. It's just that they're constantly becoming, they don't have a chance to say their opinions because they're constantly being rectified, because the Aris are coming along with them. That's called Beini. Then the higher universe that's called Akudim, that's universes where it's Iris first and the entire existence of Kalim emerges out of the R to just give context to the light. That's called a tzaddik. This is in that model that I mentioned before of Iskafia and Ishafa, that's ultimately this idea. In the Madrega of Russia, the Yetzer is in control. Atzilus, which is Tikkun, that's really Iskafia, that's subjugating, that's subduing. Because the Kalim still have conceptually the potential of being negative, but they're constantly becoming, as they emerge, they're rectified. So they never have a chance to really voice their opinion, but in theory they have an opinion. That's why, again, the pasuk that I've often mentioned from the Arizal that sort of describes that universe, that place, is called Lo Yugur Chara. Evil doesn't exist there. But the very fact that you have to say that means that there's a concept of evil. It's just it doesn't exist. Lo Yugur Chara. So that's also what we find in the Kisveri. The following word, this following description, which fits this idea, is that the Kalim of Atzilus become the soul of Bri Yetzir Asiya. So in Atzilus, the Kalim are constantly being rectified simultaneously as they emerge into reality. So they never have a chance to sort of voice their opinion, despite the fact that they potentially do have an opinion. But in the lower universes, Bria Yetzirah Asiyah, then all of a sudden the Kelim are the soul. Right? And so now they have the opportunity to say their opinion. So that's the Rosh, that's the Beini, but then Akudim is the Tzaddik. Akudim is Ishavcha, that the entire function of Kelim are not Yetzaradik. The entire function of Kelim are just to give context to the light. And so that's the highest Madrega, where Kelim come after Ar, right? They come as a result of Ar. They come to give context to the light. That's, that's the ultimate goal, right? When Hashem says, by the sixth day of creation, He said everything that He made and was Tov Ma'od, was very, very good. As Chazal said, what's very good about it? The Eitz Ahara. So the Eitz Ahara being very good is certainly not true in the lowest level of Bria Yetzirah Asiyah. That's when the Yetzer is making all the noise. And it's not even true in Atzilus, where it's just being silenced and doesn't have the opportunity to say its opinion. The ultimate place or Madrega where Yetzer is good is by the Madrega of Tzadik of Akudim, where the entire purpose of the Yetzer is just to add an exclamation point to one's Avodas Hashem. And that's what that's the ultimate teak. And that's why, when I'm just going back, that's when Yaakov Avinu Akudim, Nekudim, Uvrudim represents these three things. Akudim is that highest Madrega of Ar first and then Kalim. Nekudim, Dats, means chaos. It means Kalim first and Aris are trying to catch up. And Vrudim represents Tikkun. And so Yaakov Avinu, the part of Yaakov Avinu's Avayd over there was to... absorb within his camp all the Jewish souls that would ever be. Somehow, for some reason, a lot of, like Klal Yisrael was lost, the souls of the Jewish people were sort of lost by Lavan, right? Rachel and Leah were Lavan's daughters, right? So somehow Klal Yisrael was sort of a major aspect of Nishmas Yisrael was lost within Lavan. Part of Yaakov's Avoida was to sort of take Yaakov, Rachel and Leah from Lavan, right? And to... Chazal say that he had 600,000 sheep, Yaakov. That tells you what was going on over there, right? 600,000 sheep. It means that he was rescuing neshamas. And Nishmas Yisrael is comprised of these three parts, of Rosh, Beini, and Tzadik, of Akudim, Nekudim, and Brudim. So that's what Yaakov Avinu was doing. The sheep that he's producing for himself have these three inyanim of Akudim, Nekudim, and Brudim. That's what Nishmas Yisrael is.
The basis for the results.
The system?
Your system?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I can't say it's the basis, but it's reflected in that story. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's not where the Arizal, like, that's where he's coming from, you know, but from the Zohar Kaddish. But that's what you see in that story, that Yaakov, that's what Lavan represents. In Kedusha, Lavan represents, like, Kevyachol, the Rabbanu Shel Olam, creating these systems. That's why in the Kabbalah story you find that Lavan, not he himself was a Rasha, but everything has a parallel, right? So Lavan represents in Kedusha Luban Ha'elyon, the higher whiteness. That which is before any of these particularities, right? The before Akudim, the Ein Sof Kedushah that precedes all of this. That's what Lavan represents. That's why Lavan was constantly changing and shape-shifting and two-faced, right? Because in Tumah, it's because he's a liar, right? But in Kedusha, it's because he's reflective of Ein Sof. And Ein Sof is infinite. You can't pin it down to anything, right? Again, the Lavan was a Russia. I'm saying that, but everything has its... Everything's a mashal to something in Kedusha, too. So that's why Lavan represents Ein Sof, and Yaakov Avinu is coming and channeling from Ein Sof all these systems of universes, of Akudim, Nekudim and Brudim, because that's what Yaakov Avinu is doing. Which, and again, that's what the Sfarim point out, that from the story of Yaakov Avinu, we see how far-reaching of our Avoda is. That our Avoda doesn't just stop with Bria Yetzirah Asiyah. Our Avoda doesn't even just stop with Atzilus. Our Avoda goes back to Akudim, and ultimately goes back to Ein Sof. That's what we're called Bnei Yisrael. Yeah. The Zohar says that Yaakov Avinu's Avoda, in order to do this, was with the Kayach Tumim. Yaakov, yeah, because Yaakov Avinu was ultimately, the goal is to integrate all three, right? In other words, that the light that the light of Ein Sof should travel through all these systems, you know, and ultimately even down here, it should be Nesapech the Tov. That's what Tefillin does. All right, we'll stop at this.